Indian Law Resource Center is a law office. We have four lawyers here, but we're not a regular law office because we don't charge fees. All our work is supported by contributions from foundations and individuals and churches. We don't get any government money at all. So we represent Indian tribes or Indian governments, Indian communities of all kinds to help with problems concerning treaty rights, problems about land claims, problems about jurisdiction, all kinds of cases that involve the rights of Indian governments. We don't handle individual Indian cases very often.
Robert Tim Coulter, Executive Director of the Indian Law Resource Center, located in Washington, D.C. Although the Indian Law Resource Center is located in the nation's capital of the United States, the focus of the center's work has been on dealing with the legal concerns of Native American people in international forums. For example, not only does the center act as a consultant with non-governmental organization status in the United Nations, but they have also made formal presentations before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. In this generation's module, Mr. Coulter discusses with us further the work of the Indian Law Resource Center.
We are an organization that's been around officially since 1978, but before we established the Indian Law Resource Center, my staff and I were part of the Institute for the Development of Indian Law. We reorganized and set up this organization so that we would have a better opportunity to carry on the work that we were doing representing Indian people and Indian governments. The Indian Law Resource Center is a non-governmental organization, or a NGO, as they say. This means that we have consultative status with the United Nations Economic and Social Council. We're allowed to take part in their meetings, make recommendations, submit information, and in other ways take part in their activities.
What are some of the cases that you've dealt with in terms of the Indians?
Well, we've handled all kinds of cases. We also handle a lot of cases that involve the Court of Claims and formerly the Indian Claims Commission, cases where Indian people did not wish to have the Indian Claims Commission or Court of Claims give them money instead of land. As you may know, there are a lot of cases like the Black Hills case where lawyers made claims asking for money to pay for land that was Indian land. And in a lot of these cases, the Indian people involved had no desire whatever to accept money in place of land. And a lot of these Indian people, the Western Shoshones, the Oglala Sioux, the traditional Seminoles in Florida, many of the Hopis in Arizona, the Six Nations people in upstate New York, all of these people are fighting legal battles to overcome what these other lawyers have done, trying to exchange money for actual Indian land rights. So we're involved in a lot of work like that at the present time. We also see major problems that come up because many governments, including the U.S. government, just refuse to recognize the actual legal existence of certain tribes. And the result of that is that it is impossible for that tribe or that community of Indian people to protect their rights because the government claims they don't exist or refuses to recognize that they do exist. This is a very serious problem in Central and South America, but it's also a problem up here in the United States and in Canada as well. These are the kinds of problems that we are taking to the international level because of the futility, the impossibility of trying to correct these matters just using the United States courts or just using the local channels that are available. As most Indian people know, it is very often impossible to get any sort of true justice in the United States courts. There are many kinds of cases where the law of the United States simply does not give the Indian people any sort of justice at all. And when that happens, there's no alternative but to go to the rest of the world and try to bring this matter up in the United Nations or in some other international setting so that the eyes of the world will turn on the United States, so that world opinion can be used to influence the United States and try to prevent some of the really wrong things that are done. Take the recent Crow case, for example. The United States Supreme Court decided that the Bighorn River that flows through the Crow Reservation didn't belong to the Crow tribe, but that it belongs to the state of Montana. Now, the Crow have always owned that land and that river, and when they signed the treaty with the United States, that was made clear what was their land, what was reserved to them under the treaty, and that included the Bighorn River. The United States never defeated the Crows in a war. There was no conquest, and the Crow never gave up that river, but still the Supreme Court decided that the United States had somehow owned that river and that the United States had transferred it to Montana. So that the Supreme Court just earlier this year just transferred the rights to that very large and important river to the state of Montana. So now you've got all these non-Indian sportsmen and fishermen coming in there fishing and hunting and so on against the wishes of the Crow tribe. Now that was the Supreme Court of the United States that decided that. There's really nowhere else to go unless you go to the international level. And it is clear to me that that decision is so unjust and so unreasonable and so essentially unlawful that it might be a very effective thing to take that case to the United Nations and try to use world opinion to sway the United States. This is one of the kinds of things that the Indian Law Resource Center does, and we have helped to make formal legal presentations to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights as well. That commission is headquartered right here in Washington, D.C., but it's an international body that looks into problems of basic violations of human rights that affect all people, but that includes Indian people. So this kind of work, I think, is increasingly important.
In terms of the work that you've done with the Inter-American Commission, what are some of the concerns of Native people in Central and South America that you've been made aware of in your work?
Well, there are, of course, many concerns. The principal ones involve the questions of land. There are an awful lot of Native people in countries like Guatemala and Brazil that are literally being killed because of fights over land. The Indian people in Guatemala are the majority. Most of the people in Guatemala are Indian people. And yet a very small minority of non-Indian people in Guatemala have been able to get a hold of the legal ownership of most of the land. I say legal ownership, I don't mean true legal ownership, but ownership that is recognized by the Guatemalan government that is primarily controlled by non-Indians. And so when the Indian people who live in the countryside mostly attempt to get control of the land where they live, when they try to get control of the lands where they must farm to make their living and to survive, that leads to fights. There are constant massacres, killings of very substantial numbers of Indian people. They're called peasants down there. You sometimes have to read between the lines when you see these stories in the newspapers when they say peasants are killed or massacred in a in a fight, that's almost invariably Indian people who have been making some effort to reclaim their lands. In Brazil, you see a different kind of situation where the Indian people are, for the most part, very isolated, living in the jungle areas. The non-Indian population is attempting to build roads, develop mineral resources in these areas, and the result of that for the Indian people is that diseases are brought in by the non-Indians, the game is destroyed, waters are damaged or cut off, and their way of life becomes impossible as the non-Indian population begins to come in contact with them. Of course, these lands where the Indian people live belong to them. It's always been, of course, Indian land, and yet the Brazilian government claims to own the land, and the Brazilian government claims the right to simply move these Indian people off anytime they wish. This is, to our way of thinking, a very clear violation of fundamental human rights. The Brazilian government has no true moral right to force people off the land who have lived there since time immemorial. The Brazilian government, of course, ought to respect the right of the Indian people to live as they wish, and ought to respect their right to maintain and hold on to the lands that have always belonged to their people. Of course, this is not very different from what happens in the United States. In the United States, we don't see very much in the way of actual violence directed against Indian people. You don't see much in the way of killing, although there is occasional violence involving Indian rights. But the issues are really the same throughout North and Central and South America. Well, this problem is one that extends everywhere that Indian people are. The non-Indian governments just outright claim to own the Indian land, even if they never got it any legal way. Resource Center is a very strong advocate of the right of Indian people to control their own legal affairs and make their own decisions about what they wish to do about their rights. To our way of thinking, one of the most serious problems Indian people everywhere have had is that lawyers have done things supposedly for Indian people, have gone on claiming to represent Indian people when, in fact, the Indian people involved knew very little about what was happening and in many cases actually directly opposed what the lawyers were doing. And I think that it's now time to do everything that can be done to see to it that Indian people on reservations, Indian people in Indian communities are absolutely in control of everything that is done in their name by lawyers. We need to be sure that Indian governments and Indian communities are very well informed about what is happening legally so that the Indian people themselves can make the decisions about what they wish to do so that we no longer have this situation of lawyers making those decisions for them.
If you are interested in learning more about the Resource Center, you can write them at the Indian Law Resource Center, 601 E Street Southeast, Washington, D.C., zip code 20003. Once again, that's the Indian Law Resource Center, 601 E Street Southeast, Washington, D.C., zip code 20003.